idea that we're in a post-feminist utopia is completely empirically untrue. And so the title's really pointing to the fact that misogyny, that the hatred of women has been reloaded culturally and politically, that there's a sort of resurgence of anti-feminism, anti-woman legislation and cultural attitudes. So
was there a time when it wasn't loaded?
No, but I think the vilification of feminism and feminists has intensified, perhaps. I mean, it's always been loaded. I don't think the culture's ever become women-friendly at all. But it seems to have intensified in the last couple of decades. And unfortunately, there's a liberal feminist support for a lot of the misogynistic stuff.
Yeah, just taking their place in the patriarchal scheme of things. So, Misogyny Reloaded, your book, is described as an explosive manifesto against the resurgent sexual fascism of the New World Order. Can you talk about this?
I did some research into pornography, which was a little bit disturbing, because I think there you really see how the unspoken misogynistic hate is sort of circulating globally. And I was quite disturbed to see that there's a genre called gore, which is all about sort of eroticizing women's slaughter and murder. So that's become quite popular. The 12-minute video that was leaked about those jocks sort of joking about how they raped and killed this girl highlighted that sexual violence against women has become a source of humor. It's become funny. So,
amazing, isn't it? How can it be funny? How did we get to such a stage?
Well, I mean, the terrible reality is that I think patriarchy doesn't actually recognise that women are human beings. I mean, you know, we're not just...
Well, it couldn't be funny, no.
Still, I mean, there's that long political and philosophical tradition of women patriarchy seeing women as closer to animals than humans, so...
It's really hard to understand.
Dehumanized.
And I mean, this online world, how does it contribute to, again, this sex war on women?
I think it makes hardcore misogyny more permissible. And it sort of allows a space for it to flourish, to be encouraged.
And so women become more harmed and damaged by the culture. Many who are suffering from eating disorders, self-mutilation and even suicide. I mean, it's all perpetuated, isn't it?
Yeah, there are sort of overt forms of self-destruction and, you know, it's been prompted by patriarchy and you know, sexual violence against women. But I think there's the sort of economic attacks against women are increasing as well.
Yes, I like your chapter on the single mothers.
Well, yeah, and I think it's really important for the women's liberation movement to look at single mothers and look at what's happened to them.
And they are neglected, aren't they?
Yeah, and I think that's a legacy of a white middle-class bias within the women's liberation movement. You know, it has been.
It's also like, you don't mention this particular group of women, but women prisoners, I feel, totally neglected by liberal feminism.
That's true, and often they're poor, and percentage of...
The mothers.
Yeah.
And indigenous women. Yeah,
absolutely.
Really neglected. So in a way, like you say, misogyny is perpetuated by men, but also by women.
Well,
to some extent.
Yeah, I think there's definitely an alliance between liberal feminism and neoliberalism. And neoliberalism isn't, you know, a sort of soft, easy process of social change. It's harsh, it's economically violent and very oppressive. So, but I think liberal feminism has provided a sort of glossy face for some of these harsher, oppressive socioeconomic tools of neoliberalism, you know, it's a sort of acceptable face. You know, this whole idea of self-empowerment and the liberal feminism market is very individualistic and neoliberal, isn't it?
Well, it's also, you go into that, you write about how the mainstreaming of misogyny has occurred in the context of the Don't Worry, Be Happy movement.
Yeah.
Yeah, where we blame ourselves for our socioeconomic conditions.
Mm. Mm. Yeah, absolutely. I think there's multiple cultural forces that have allowed this resurgent misogyny to flourish. So it's quite a complex cultural phenomenon. It's not...
So perhaps we could go into that.
Well, in terms of single mothers, I think the neoliberal welfare reforms that started with Clinton and spread to the UK and then Australia started a sort of socioeconomic persecution of vulnerable women and children, which is anti-feminist, really. I think it's important to recognise that what happens to single mothers is vital to the overall health and security of women in general. So if you start persecuting single mothers, you are persecuting women as a sex class. Because every woman has the potential to become, to fall down into that ghetto, social ghetto space of single mothers. So I think when the media starts vilifying single mothers, it's sending out a sort of message to women as a whole that... It's a political threat.
It is, isn't it?
Yeah.
And that's what they're actually doing. They've taken away the pension, put women on New Start allowance, and it's poverty.
You know, and on a crude level, it's about herding women into relationships with men.
Yeah, that's right.
You have to stay with a man.
You have to
stay. It doesn't matter what he does to you or your children. It's, you know, the only way to survive is to stay married or stay partnered.
Or stay with some abusive work
exactly.
of some description, perhaps prostitution, I mean, you know.
Well, yeah.
Mm. So, yeah, no, I think that chapter's very important.
To have no compassion towards single mothers and their children.
And, you know, they're doing the most important job of all.
Well, yeah, they should be supported.
That's insane. So, I suppose your last chapter actually talks about another world possible, and I think to understand what is happening to us, you speak of the relations between women, work, freedom, capitalism and Western military imperialism. So perhaps you could explain that.
Well, I suppose in the last chapter what I wanted to do is shift the traditional feminist focus on sexual violence to the larger, more formidable violence, male violence, which is the military-industrial complex, and sort of shift attention to how that parasitic complex is vampiring not just working women's taxpayers' dollars, because in America, for example, half the taxpayers' dollar goes to the guns, to the male military-industrial complex, but it's actually causing a lot of pollution in the world, so it's bad for the environment. And it's just perpetuating this necrophilic, patriarchal, supremacist mentality which radiates from the top of the military-industrial complex down into, you know, the kind of films we watch, the glorification of violence, of weapons in, you know, computer games, into kick-ass, you know, femininity, women with guns is meant to be empowering and so on. So there's a kind of whole colonization of the imaginary that goes on through the patriarchal military-industrial complex. And a lot of feminists, there's a resurgence, I think, also of anti-war feminism through Nigerian English writers like Amima Mama, who's saying that the greatest threat to humanity and women is the rise of this authoritarian military-industrial complex. So what a lot of feminists are now starting to see is this normalization of military values and this growing military build-up.
Yeah.
And with America at the moment, there's been an axis towards Asia. So they're engaged in a Cold War with China, And they're recruiting Australia. Well, they're demanding that Australia participate in that Cold War with them. So currently, that's what's happening with Australia. Yeah. There's going to be increased military spending, I think.
And then, as you say, that's our money. That's our taxes at work.
Well, you know, there was that American president a long time ago that warned about the rise of the
President Eisenhower.
And said, Eisenhower said, you know, this funding of nuclear submarines or whatever is actually theft from people, from the people.
Who are hungry.
At the moment, Abbott is spending, I think it's like $29 million a day on the military. Mm. There's pressure from the US to buy submarines and so on. So there's been an unprecedented build-up of the US military in Australia from the coast, from Perth to Darwin. And this is a feminist issue. The military, the male military industrial complex, is an important feminist issue.
It doesn't get much attention, does it?
No, I mean, If feminism needs to regain its courage in facing those big guns of patriarchy,
that's right. The really big issues.
And yeah, it is, because it's caught up with austerity cuts. There's been increased the austerity. The lie of austerity, there's not enough money and so on. There's so much money, it's just going in the wrong direction. So
yes, we want to take money from the ABC, SBS, education, hospitals, whatever.
Yeah.
And that's where it's going, isn't it?
Yeah.
And so challenging militarism is essential for a feminist revolution, really, isn't it?
It starts there, I think.
Yeah, amazing. Who benefits from this reloaded misogyny?
Well, I mean, the male elite, really, and men in general. So, and women who have opportunistic and have
play the game.
Yeah. But for me, the reloaded misogyny is not just a sort of increased effective disgust towards women. It's a complex socio-political matrix, and it's, you know, it is patriarchal capitalism, but I think patriarchal capitalism is sort of becoming something, it's morphing into something almost fascist. I think we're in a period of rapid political transformation, and you know, you can see what's happening with austerity regimes across Europe and also here now. There's a militarisation of national and international politics.
And women have to be the victims.
Well, yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, women are always the poorest of the poor, so
you take away from women.
Yeah. The austerity has a gender. Women suffer from austerity more than men. And feminists in the UK have been watching what's going on, and more women are losing jobs, more men are gaining jobs. So the impact of austerity regimes in England has meant that there's a shift in the gender profile of the workplace.
So women
are being pushed out and men are being pulled in.
Back to their husbands.
Yeah. Mm.
What did you think of the political beheading of Julia Gillard?
God, where to start with that?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, it's disturbing that Australia has one of the world's most notorious misogynists in power as Prime Minister at the moment, with a cabinet that has less women than Afghanistan. And he is apparently the Minister for Women as well. I mean,
he is, isn't he?
It's absurd. It's sort of, grotesque.
Minister for Women and taking money away from women.
I know, it's a direct political attack.
Time to leave the country.
Yeah, it's awful that Gillard was attacked like that. I mean, it's shameful. It's
It was just horrible to watch, really, because, you know, as has been noted, Tony Abbott's been in the job for, I don't know, 3 or 4 months.
Yeah.
Nobody's attacking him, but she was attacked every day of her political life as Prime Minister because she was a woman and because she was, you know, so-called barren, and she didn't, you know, she didn't conform, did she?
What I did notice, and not much media attention was given to this, is she cut the defence budget.
Mm.
And as soon as she did that, Abbott went to the US and spoke at the Heritage Foundation and basically promised America that he would ramp up the defence budget and came back.
Amazing.
And I really think that, I mean, I'm not the first person to say that America has a very dominant relationship to Australian politics and foreign politics.
Mm, mm.
Yeah,
because it was a terrible time, really, to watch what happened to her, and to still hope against hope that, you know, people would re-elect her, but of course they didn't.
No.
Mm.
No, in power now we've got a man who is very subservient towards the US military-industrial complex. I don't think that's a coincidence.
No. Oh, no. And I mean,
I think it's important for feminists to see the larger picture as well. To look at the... to have that global perspective of capitalism and how it operates. To recognise that America is an empire. It's a military empire.
And, I mean, even just today in the paper there was an article about a young cricket champion, Elise Perry. Did you read it at all?
No, I didn't.
So she's an up-and-coming best female athlete, arguably, in Australia. She's a cricketer.
Oh.
And so some would say she deserves serious respect, but not so from the cricket fans on the Facebook page.
Oh, really?
And amongst this abuse are comments referring to why she is out of the kitchen and questions of where to find her naked on the net.
Really?
Welcome to the world of Mad Men, literally, writes Rachel Oakes Ash. So, yeah, that's amazing. And, you know, they're talking about the barrage of online sexual abuse being nothing new. But, I mean...
No, it's been going on for
madness, isn't it?
It's shocking.
Mm. So on as you're saying, we've got this, I suppose, this level that we all know about, the violence against women in life, you know, in pornography, prostitution, just an example, or the example of that young girl. But then, as you say, you need that bigger umbrella to really understand what you're talking about in Misogyny Reloaded, I think.
And I think they're connected.
Mm.
You know, there is a relationship between the two. And...
sort of like the violence against women has to happen to fulfil this big agenda, I feel. I don't know. Mm.
Well, yeah, I mean, if you keep the women oppressed
and
brutalised and traumatised, if you continually traumatise them economically, socially, sexually, then they're not going to rise up as a class and fight. They're not going to be able to fight this larger oppression.
And fight for themselves and their children.
Yeah.
And, you know, stop sons going to war even. I mean, there's so many aspects to it, isn't there?
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, it's a really interesting read.
Yeah, not very uplifting, but...
Well, nor was your other book, was it, that you contributed with Melinda Tankard-Reist, Big Porn Inc.?
I think, you know, when women stand together, they can achieve amazing things.
So, I think
one of the tricks of patriarchal capitalism, or whatever you want to name that monstrous thing, is that women's voices don't mean anything, that we don't have any power. That, you know, it's all over, it's, you know, give up now kind of message, which is very depressing. But
well, I think what you do say, I think, is that that what we need is a mass movement of conscientious subjection to paying taxes to the military-industrial complex. We've got to protest these wars, which we do, and we have to have some sort of transparency about weapons and how they kill. We don't really, I don't think we deal with this, so we should start writing more about it, obviously. And what influence do military-industrial complex have over our governments? They're questions that we pursue.
And what is the role of America in shaping our government's policies?
Yes,
and,
yes.
You know, exactly why is almost $30 million a day being spent by the Abbott government on the military? Just imagine the life-affirming things that could be spent on, you know, education, women's refuges, supporting the community.
Looking after the environment.
Yes, exactly.
It's all collapsing.
I know. Women's anger has been stolen from them as well.
Well, that will be in that sort of got to be cheerful movement, is it?
Yeah, because I think there's been a sort of steady narrowing of the range of permissible emotions that women are allowed to have, and to the point where we're almost expected to smile constantly and to be upbeat and cheerful and like bubbly little girls. And there's a lot of stuff on the internet and generally sort of advice books for women saying, you know, you have to kind of be smiley and like a child, have the emotional rage of a happy little girl playing in a sandpit. In fact, that's a direct quote from some slightly creepy advice to women about how to attract a man that's going to marry you. You have to kind of act like a little girl. While men sort of seem to be allowed to... It's more permissible. I'm speaking, you know, in generalisations, of course, but there has been stuff done proving this, that men are allowed to sort of express anxieties and concern and you know, anger and the full range of human emotions. They're not labelled as emotional or crazy or hysterical, blah, blah, blah. So.
And I guess they're the ones that are allowed to talk about this military-industrial complex or talk about weapons. Women don't really... challenge that enough, I don't think.
I know, it's men's business.
The men's business, yeah.
Killing each other, oppressing other countries is men's business.
Yes. So, I think you've really got some great points in that book.